go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey everyone, welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I am Ben Bowen. Scott, today we're going to talk about cafe.
Cafe. Fantastic. I love cafes. You get little tables outside, you maybe get a little iced tea, something like that. You sit out in the sunshine, watch people go by.
Fair enough. We're also going to talk about corporate average fuel economy.
Oh, I figured you were going to pull some kind of trick like that on me.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. I know about cafe standards as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, CAFE standards, of course, first came into U.S. law when Congress enacted them in 1975.
Ben, you're right to business today.
Am I right to business?
Yeah, you weren't messing around, were you?
Oh, no, man.
No, okay. All right. Well, let's get into it then.
Oh.
So 1973. That's fine.
1975 I've got.
Oh, 1975. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, just to set the stage for what we're going to talk about, the goal of these corporate average fuel economy standards was to reduce energy consumption by increasing the economy of cars and light trucks.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I see. And how's that working out for us?
What a good question. That's yeah, that's kind of what our show is about.
Yeah, we're going to kind of talk through this today because, there's been a recent update, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a very recent update. In fact, we had one and I think it was in 2009. There was a mention of a new standard.
Mm-hmm.
And then even just this last month, it's been updated. The end of July, it was updated once again with fuel standards that go all the way out through 2025.
Now, what is the magic number of 2025?
Oh, okay. So 2025, let's see. 2025, the magic number for this. Now, this is across the board what the average fuel economy of a manufacturer's annual fleet. So this means all vehicles produced by this manufacturer that fall into these two categories, cars and light trucks.
Mm-hmm.
54.5 miles per gallon.
Now
that's average.
I'm going to be open-minded here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to sound skeptical. I actually want an explanation. How on earth is that going to actually happen?
You know what, Ben? I honestly don't know, and I think that there's some reasons here that some of the big automakers are actually behind these numbers. You're going to hear that in some mm-hmm. of these. If you read about this, you'll find out that Ford and GM and Chrysler and other manufacturers that make vehicles that are sold here in the United States are behind this. They say this is fine. We can deal with this.
Mm-hmm.
There's reasons for that. Now we'll get to them later because there's ways around this. 54.5 doesn't necessarily always mean 54.5 average. And that's really, really tricky, but we'll talk about that, I promise. But we're talking about a jump that goes between, the current standards, which go out, or which up until the end of July, mm-hmm. went up through 2016. The average the target was 35.5 miles per gallon. And, even that was, a lot of people said that's pretty ambitious. Yeah. Because you're talking about, a lot of big pickup trucks that, still qualify as light trucks. They're not heavy duty. They're
mm-hmm.
not, work grade, as far as, and I don't know if I said that right. I don't know about work grade, but heavy duty industrial type trucks.
Right. Commercial trucks.
Those don't fall into that.
Yeah.
But we're talking about the F-150 from Ford. We're talking about minivans that companies produce, talking about big SUVs. We're talking about, Suburban and Tahoe mm-hmm. and all those. All of those come into play and into factor here. And, the Hummer, when it was being produced, and that had an 11 miles per gallon mm-hmm. average or best rating, really. So you're talking about a number even at 35.5 that seemed unattainable or still seems unattainable by 2016.
And now to 50 plus.
And now we're going to 54.5. So how's it going to happen?
What a good question. It is going to happen. We're going to try to do this rather.
Yeah.
Almost every car manufacturer is, on board with this, as you said, except for, Volkswagen.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And I know why.
Yeah. And Volkswagen, actually, this might be a good segue into the ins and outs of this, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Volkswagen hates the new standards.
Actually, they do. They've come out publicly against mm-hmm. it, because what happens is that companies pick sides on this thing. You know, they say, because, you know, a lot of them have come out in favor of it, as we mentioned. Mm-hmm. Others have come out against it, and VW is one of the loudest against it right now. Mm-hmm. This is still early on, so we'll find out more, you know, who is not aligning themselves with these standards. But VW says, of course, they've got to comply to it,
right.
But they're saying we don't support this, and here's why. They say that, you know, according to Volkswagen themselves, I'm reading from a blog that was posted in Autoblog.
Mm-hmm.
Zach Bowman wrote an article about VW not enjoying these new CAFE standards.
Right.
Says that they don't endorse the move, and it's because that while vehicles face a 5% annual increase in fuel economy during this time, light trucks have to attain a 3.5% annual increase. Now, that means that Volkswagen, who produces mostly cars, mostly what falls into the category of cars under this this legislation, they are not getting the benefit of the light truck side of this that other companies are, because other companies make vehicles like I think I've seen one use the PT Cruiser, minivans, of course, are the common one, SUVs, but now they do make a couple. They make the Rutan and the Touareg, which are SUVs that do fall under the light truck designation. Mm-hmm. But the company, basically VW, is saying, you know, we're not getting the benefit out of the lighter side of this. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to really adhere to this and adhere to it by, you know, a lot of R&D that's going to cost us a lot of money. And guess what that's going to do to your cost as well?
I imagine it'll raise it.
Yeah, that's
and they take it a step further in their objection and say that the proposal actually encourages automakers to build more large, inefficient vehicles because it helps you to get around that.
Yeah, and that's not an uncommon view, Ben. That's not an uncommon view, because a lot of people say, well, what if the company decides to produce 55% of their vehicles now that they output are going to be under this light truck designation and therefore fall under less strict restrictions, I guess, if that's the way to say it.
Yes.
In that, you know, they don't have to adhere to quite such a stringent mile per gallon limit.
Yeah. And while we're at it, this is probably where the listener begins to see, do you guys see how this can have a lot of loopholes in it? And mm-hmm. we see this quite often with, legislation at any level. It's just the nature of the beast.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'd like to talk about the credits.
Here we go.
This one coming.
Yeah, this is from the very beginning, because when we talked about this, and Ben, yeah, I want you to tell us a little bit about the credits, because when you first mentioned this and you said, well, this is an awful tall order, this 54.5, mm-hmm. and I said, it's not really 54.5 in 2025. That's because of these credits and special exemptions.
Yeah, so it's basically, here's how it works. You're a car manufacturer, you need to hit that magic number, that 54 number, and you can't do it with the vehicles that you have. It's just not going to work in the case.
Even incrementally, because we're talking about very incremental steps up.
Right.
Here, and there's a whole formula by how they have to adhere to these, mm-hmm. but we're not going to go into that now. But it's incremental steps.
But here's the thing. You don't really have to meet the standard through your vehicle's performance alone. You can earn CAFE credits to offset deficiencies in CAFE performances. So basically, here's how this works. When the average fuel economy of either a passenger car or a light truck line or a fleet for a model year exceeds the standard, the established standard of that time, the manufacturer earns credits. So let's say, just for the sake of argument, then the standard in, you know, 2008 or something. I'm making up a number. This mm-hmm. is not the standard. The standard in 2008 is 20 miles, and then your fleet get 20 miles for passenger vehicles, and your fleet gets an average of 23.4 or something. You have earned a credit, and the amount of credit these manufacturers earn is based on the tenths of a mile per gallon by which they exceed the standard. I mean, it sounds like gobbledygook, but it does make sense. And what this translates to is a little bit of a deformation of the real CAFE standards, because these credits, once they're earned, can be applied to any three consecutive model years before or after the year in which the credit is earned. So what does that mean? That means that if Scott, you and I make a you know, a crazy SUV the year before and the year after, we earn a credit for our very light, super efficient, you know, the Benjamin Mini or whatever.
Sure.
Right. The Mini Benjamin or something.
I can get behind that. Sure. Yeah. Why not?
And what we can do then is still meet our cafe standards on our SUV or our Scott and Ben Hummer, and we'll be able to get over, basically.
I got to tell you, Ben, it just sounds a little fishy. A little cook in the books is what it kind of sounds like to me, doesn't it?
It is cooking the books.
It seems that way to me, and the reason is because, you know, there's a an equation that they follow that you mentioned, you know, like a miles per gallon equals X number of grams of CO2 expelled per mile.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this gets into the carbon and, you know, carbon credits and the footprints and all this.
Right.
And honestly, you know, without delving deep into this, because of these credits and these emissions credits and the grams saved and, mm-hmm. and, you know, the profits and debts and these, it's all very difficult to figure out. There's a whole, list of cafe credits that you can find online. If you want to find out what the credits are for vehicles like EVs, plug-in hybrids, fuel mm-hmm. cell vehicles, there's full-size pickups, which oddly enough are eligible for credits.
Mm-hmm.
There's air conditioning credits. Did you know that, Ben?
I was not aware of AC
credits.
Yeah,
that's, and AC credits. Now that's crazy because, I mean, does that really do anything to reduce tailpipe emissions? I don't know. I don't know how to think about this, like mm-hmm. the right way to get this out, but, there's also new technology. So if you have, you know, electric features versus, something that was normally run by a pump off the motor, you're going to gain some credit, just for developing that new technology and being the first to bring it to market. So, you know, they're going to reward new technology and advancements, but they're going to reward it with credits towards CAFE standards so that necessarily they don't have to follow the standards exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be different for every manufacturer from this point forward, really.
Yeah, and let me play devil's advocate here because I know obviously we're coming down and we're saying these people are cooking the books, but that's one side of the argument. The other side mm-hmm. is that these credits can be seen as necessary because they sort of soften the blow to the company's infrastructure
sure.
from retooling. And also the legislators here are attempting to build this idea of calculating CAFE standard goes under the NHTSA, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's still a federal thing. And
yeah, it's regulated by the
right.
NHTSA.
And what they're trying to do is arrive at an overall big picture number, a bottom line kind of number.
Yeah, and honestly, the stated benefits of these are the benefits that, you know, the government is telling us the reason that we're doing this is
yes.
because of, you know, clean air standards.
Mm-hmm.
We want a clean environment. We don't want to rely on foreign oil quite as much as we do. We want, you know, that equates to security.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a lot of good reasons that are stated behind this, and that's the reason. Now, a lot of people will say that this also comes down to, well, it's another way to tax people. It's another way to get money out of them because, you know, there's going to be all these new standards that we have to comply to, and that's going to lead to a lot of R&D on mm-hmm. the manufacturer side, and that's going to be passed along to us to the tune of, according to one estimate that I saw here, Ben, and I'm looking for my note right now. There it is. But it's approximately, and this is just based on the research estimates that, you know, this person, Warner Todd Houston from I'm going to have to find that in a minute where it's from. But add up to about $6,000 to the cost of every new car by 2025.
What?
Yeah, now that's an additional $6,000. Now, the problem
Buddy, I could buy a car for $6,000.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing is that, you know, if you're looking for a lower-end vehicle, if you're wanting to purchase a car that's, you know, basically an economy car.
Okay.
It's going to be a super efficient economy car, but you're still going to end up paying money for the development of new technology in that car in order to mm-hmm. boost the miles per gallon somewhere down the road. You know, between now and 2025, they're going to pour a lot of money into certain programs to make it
right.
more advanced, more efficient.
Let's also put out there, though, this may not be money spent in vain.
Mm-hmm.
It is extra money no matter how you look at it
mm-hmm.
or where you fall in this debate. But the truth is there's also a strong possibility that this could drive innovation of new technology, meaning that it could make some vast improvements.
Oh, it will. I have no doubt that it definitely will. This will push people into advancements that, you know, they might not have made for several years down the road. That same thing happens in times of war.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's by necessity, right? It's by necessity or racing. Racing is another instance. You know, it's people invent by necessity, and oftentimes it has to be thought of right then. You know, we got to have a fix right now. Then we'll develop it later. We'll fine tune it. Just right now, let's get a solution. One more quick thing here, because we're talking about the cost of new cars and by 2025, and if we're adding $6,000 per car according to this estimate, wouldn't that just lead to people driving older used cars around? I mean, people hanging onto their cars, because just today I was in the elevator and we have our little screen that gives us updates on news, you know, news briefs and things.
Oh, wait, we should tell our listeners. So in the elevator at HowStuffWorks headquarters, there's this little screen that comes on when you're actually in the elevator. And it seems like the entire purpose of this thing is to keep you from having to make any sort of small talk.
That's right. It's a conversation saver.
Yeah,
really.
It's weird.
Yeah, because you just stand there and stare at the screen and get your, three or four updates while you go to your floor, and that's it.
You learn words.
Yeah,
words and acrimonious
words and numbers and weather and things like that.
So you saw.
I saw on this readout today, you know, that says that just today, there's a survey out that says 54% of Americans are likely to not purchase a new vehicle right now because of the additional financial burden.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see that happening, especially if, you know, you're talking down the road here at another $6,000 per car average.
Yeah.
That's going to make people hang on to their older used cars longer, I would believe. You know, people are going to put more into maintenance of the older stuff. And that's not necessarily the new technology out there on the road.
That's true. That's a really good point. And I have something that dovetails nicely with this. We're talking about how costs are passed on to the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
Which ultimately is going to happen. Let's talk about the penalties for companies that don't play ball.
Ah, okay.
So let's say if the Scott and Ben Auto Company has umpteen buku credits or whatever, and we have managed to play smart with those credits, we still don't comply with these standards, then our penalty is going to be something like $5.50 per tenth of an MPG under the target value times the total volume of those vehicles. And that's already $5.50 a pop for every tenth.
Yeah.
Times the number of the fleet. So that's going to get expensive.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm going to tell you something. That is according to most industry experts, they say that's actually a low penalty.
Yeah.
That's a low penalty to pay for them. And when you're talking about industries that, you know, they fluctuate in billions of dollars, you know, profits versus loss. And I got to tell you, I think it sounds like an awful lot of money. But honestly, when you're talking about the amount that they're going to pay for these fines, these penalties, I don't think it's really going to bother them that much. And a lot of people are, you know, the critics are saying, well, you know, with these low penalties, what's there to gain from, you know, them pushing to really exceed or meet these
limits. Then there's not really enforcement.
There is enforcement. They do collect on these. It has been collected. It's been collected over the years, but it's not strong enough or strict enough for some people's preference.
Oh,
I guess
they say
that, you know, we need to really up that. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they're just not going to comply because they'll pay that fine and not really think twice about it.
Now, people probably already know that this sort of stuff is a controversial issue. Mainly, I think, because it is regulation, but also because it touches on some very hot button issues for a lot of folks. And
yeah, because we're talking about new technologies. Like, this is the goal, is to push people into advancements and, you know, the new electric cars, the new gas electric hybrids, you know, all the different variations of that that come along, all the new technology. That's the goal behind this. And also, you know, the environment, of course, is also mentioned, and, you know, do it for the children. That's always mentioned. But, you know, honestly, Ben, I don't know if it's really, is it really working at this point? I just don't know. I mean, should we leave that up to the listeners to call in and tell us, or?
Yeah, we should. And you know what though? Here's a little tidbit to, impress and depress people. If you're talking about these penalties, the large domestic manufacturers in the United States have never paid one.
Hmm. No kidding.
No, it's largely, I believe, European manufacturers.
So they have met or exceeded the CAFE standards to date. Now, with these new strict
What I was going to say. Yeah.
But with the credits, you never know. I mean, these special exceptions that are allowed. Mm-hmm. So there's actually the CAFE, and then there's the actual CAFE.
Right.
And, okay, the actual CAFE is what they're kind of more looking at, and that's why they're saying, well, maybe it's not so bad.
Yeah, and I'm kind of on that side of it. I don't think this is bad. Now, a lot of times when we do top-down legislation, we end up missing very important things, and we end up sometimes complicating things or making them inefficient. Mm-hmm. However, it's very strange. It's kind of difficult to figure out if the dog is wagging its tail or the tail is wagging its dog in some of these scenarios. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that there is involvement with something meant to push the or encourage the private industry to explore new technology. However, man, oh man, 54 miles per gallon?
It's an awful lot.
By 2025, it's a tall order.
It's ambitious. And, you know, some of the examples that you'll see have, you know, vehicles that they gave like a, you know, Producer X creates five vehicles and, you know, four of them are in this range and then one gets, I think it was like 100 miles per gallon, Ben.
Yeah.
And you think, well, man, that's incredible. They're going to meet the standard. But when you average all that out, it doesn't even come close to meeting the 54.5. So, you know, think of it that way, this average, and think about the volume of vehicles that we're talking about. And, you know, companies like Ford that put out, you know, the number one selling vehicle in all the United States, which is the F-150, for how many years now? 30-some years, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's a good ride, though.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And, you know, the other manufacturers that put out vehicles that they claim are small trucks, you know, that really aren't. But for fuel economy, they're emissions, they're considered as cars, but then for fuel economy, they're considered light trucks.
Ah.
So there's a little bit of a trick there, you know. There's a lot to – you know, a lot to digest in this, and there's no way that we're coming close to even getting all the details in any way.
Sure.
It's tough to kind of wade through this with just this announcement and, you know, the advancements that they – or actually the announcement that they've laid on top of this and make it all make sense really. You need to kind of go back to the beginning and look from the very beginning at what they've done and the amounts through the years that they've – the target rates, I guess.
Yeah.
It's probably the best way to say
That's
right?
the best way to say it.
Yeah. So – you really need to investigate it a little bit more and see if you agree with us or disagree with us. And, you know, because you say that you understand why they're doing it. I understand why as well. But I tend to see it more as like an overreaching legislative move that, you know, I think, I don't know, maybe they just don't belong there. I just don't think that, you know, I think that we need to advance, of course. I think we need to do better with what we have. But I just don't think the government needs to push automakers into doing this at quite such a rapid rate because we're going to end up paying for it.
Yeah, I'm a little skeptical as well because it seems like this may encourage legislative organizations as well to see an opportunity for political points in the short term.
Mm-hmm.
But it might not be the best thing in the long term to set up goals if they are not going to be met. You know, especially if it's – because it makes for a great headline, Scott. It makes for a great headline this kind of stuff.
It's a tough part. You know, it's a tough thing because you do want them to get there, of course.
Right.
It'd be great if everybody had an average corporate fuel economy of 54.5, wouldn't it?
Yes.
But, I mean, that'd be great for consumers. But then would the cost of fuel go up?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one of the things you got to take into consideration. I've got one more quick little number here if you want, because I've got a couple of numbers here that just kind of show you where the mindset of the heads of Americans are right now.
All right, yeah.
You know, all this is coming out at the end of July, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I had the numbers through June of 2011, June this year. I don't have July numbers yet, but get this: the vehicles sold in just June of 2011, the average mile per gallon rating of that vehicle, of all vehicles in the United States, 21.6 miles per gallon.
Ouch!
So that's significantly off of the 54.5 that they're searching for, right, in 2025.
Yeah.
Now, what that means, though, is that people started buying larger cars and trucks once again after – remember the fuel costs went up above $4 for a long time and even higher than that, almost $5
at a certain point. And everybody wanted a Mini.
Exactly. They all started to buy lower vehicle – well, smaller vehicles, more fuel efficient. But at the same time as these numbers were taken, this 21.6 average, the cost of fuel was $3.58 across the United States.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So the average fuel cost in June of 2011 was $3.58, and the average miles per gallon of every vehicle, every new vehicle sold is 21.6. So it shows you that, you know, just that little bit of drop in fuel economy makes people kind of regress back to – and I don't know if regress is right, but just
return.
Go back. Yeah, they want to go back to the bigger vehicles that they like. They want the SUVs. They do want the larger cars. They want, you know, something that's maybe a little more performance-oriented that doesn't get the efficiency of a compact car that might not be quite as much fun to drive.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't have the cargo-carrying ability. You know, things like that. I mean, and you know me. I'm a small car guy anyway, so
yeah.
I'm not trying to say anything bad about them. But, you know, people do like their big cars. And this shows it. I mean, but I think if gas were to go up another 42 cents in that same time frame, I bet you'd see that average mile per gallon number would be much higher.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I see. We all know that we're on the same page when it comes to fuel efficiency. Everybody wants more fuel efficient vehicles. And most of the conflicts over these kind of issues center around the pursuit of that, you know, the pursuit of that goal. How do we best do it? I'd be very interested, Scott, to hear what our listeners think about CAFE standards, to hear also what kind of mile per gallon measurement they have on their own vehicles. Because we get some emails every so often with people talking about this.
Oh, sure. Whether it's hypermiling or if it's the you know, the old pickup truck in the driveway that gets 3 miles per gallon that they have to use, you know, to haul hay or something like that. So, yeah, I'd be interested to find out what people have out there as well.
So whether you're a hardcore hypermiler or you have a work truck that just leaks gas somehow, you know, not literally, but, you know.
Figuratively.
Yeah. Write to us and tell us about it. You guys know this is the part of the show where Scott and I point out that we have a Facebook page and we have a Twitter page. And we – am I getting old? Is Twitter page the right thing to say?
I don't know. We tweet?
We tweet?
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. And you can also check out our blog. You can learn more about fuel efficiency on our website. And you can send us an email directly at
– carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes.